Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
Clearly going forward, a story that's going to dominate the headlines for the rest of this week is the potential trade of Deshaun Watson. If you saw reports earlier today that it's not just the Miami Dolphins in the mix for Deshaun Watson, multiple teams could get involved for him again, including suddenly the Carolina Panthers. Oh, what happened? I thought Sam Darnold was great. Oh, the Jets made a big mistake. Sam Darnold's so good. Oh, I told you he was just a guy. Even when they were 3-0, he was just the guy. And guess what? He's not even just the guy now. He's a guy barely holding on because they don't have a backup. They try to get Teddy Bridgewater back if they could. I told you he's just the guy. So we could see a deal for Deshaun Watson, and mainly because if you saw Ian Rappaport's report yesterday, NFL Network, that the possibility of, okay, the NFL will act when Deshaun Watson is traded, they will put him on the exempt list. That doesn't look like that's going to happen. You know, Rappaport's report was you have to be charged. If you're charged with a felony, if you're charged with something, then that's when you go on the exempt list. And that's basically what the NFL has done. When you are charged with a felony, when you are charged with something serious, that's when the NFL puts you on the exempt list. And right now, he's not been charged with anything. He is facing allegations of sexual assault and inappropriate behavior in 22 active lawsuits. But as far as being charged, that's not happened yet. So get ready for the incredibly awkward and awful optic of Deshaun Watson getting traded and then jumping right into play for whoever gets it, whether it's the Dolphins, whether it's the Washington football team, because that's exactly what's going to happen. All right, a team is not going to trade for him and say, you sit. He's going to get in. As soon as he knows the offense, he's going to come in and play. And this is the one thing the NFL is not really going to understand. They don't understand now. They don't know what it's going to look like when he winds up getting traded and being able to play. They don't get what the backlash and the attention on Deshaun Watson is going to be. They're not ready for this. They think, well, what can we do? The guy, and they're going to watch that. You're going to see the attention that is spent on him. You're going to see the protests that happen that are going to be covered on the news, not just a sports topic. This is going to be CNN, Fox News, everywhere else. You're going to see it. This is going to be covered ad nauseum. There's going to be many people who are going, very famous people who are going to stand up and want to know why. The government's going to want to get involved. Everybody is going to have an opinion on this. And this is going to be a really awful look for the NFL, and they don't get that that's where it's headed. And they're going to try to throw their hands up and say, there's not a lot we can do. Well, you know what? Roger Goodell, pretty much, I trust that he has a wide-ranging latitude of powers to do something if he really wanted to. I mean, he doesn't go from, I'm the commissioner, to, I'm just the commissioner. I mean, I don't want me to do it. I'm just the commissioner. There's a lot of things he can do. The NFL is not going to be ready for all of this that happens. More details are going to get out as this case gets played through the media even more, and it's going to hang over the rest of the season, and it's just going to be the NFL is going to not be able to get out from under this because they didn't know how to act and try to put this aside like MLB did with Trevor Bauer, and we're waiting for it to happen. The NFL still hasn't found a way to figure that out, and this is how it's going to be. I don't think they understand how big an impact this is going to have if a guy with 22 allegations of sexual assault, inappropriate behavior. That is a very big deal to say, go play in the National Football League. I don't know if the NFL's ready for that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, you know, you're trying to take the temperature, and obviously Roger Goodell not necessarily coming down with a heavy hand like he did once, right? He took power, and they wanted to put in the player conduct policy, and they did, and there were a number of incidents where they went heavy, even if there wasn't a lot to a case or criminal charges, right? Remember what happened to Ezekiel Elliott, Ben Roethlisberger. You look at Tom Brady and deflated footballs. I mean, there were a lot of, you know, cases where there was at least some sense that he'd gone beyond his powers. And then there have been other cases that have gone pretty quiet. From a national media perspective, a lot's being said about the Washington football team and the investigation of the emails, right? A lot of John Gruden and the fallout. And now you got the government wanting to get involved in that. Yet you still have this, you know, race norming billion-dollar settlement that's barely gotten a whisper, right? I think part of it is because people just don't understand it or haven't tried to. So you got that whole thing circling around CTE and long-term disability and detrimental effects of having played football that we're still, you know, trying to wrap our arms around. And then you have this case where it's a bunch of allegations, and they're serious in nature, quite obviously. But now it begs the question of, okay, if he's still eligible to play, he just didn't want to play for Houston, right? Because all along, it's if he would acquiesce and want to play for them, I got to imagine you would have never heard the name Davis Mills other than draft day. Mm-hmm. Instead, mm-hmm. you have this battle, and now you've got a bunch of suitors, and they're trying to figure it all out. Again, from the team perspective, it all goes out of the Bill O'Brien trading away all assets and whatever issues he has with the ownership there, and now trying to figure out what the end game is. And yeah, it's a bad headline, but there's a number of bad headlines competing. And with the civil cases, I got to imagine there's a still active settlement talks, no matter what's being said and put through mouthpieces to make that part of it go away.
You got to think, but this will blow everything else away. All the other headline, all the other things in the NFL is dealing with this. This will be an everyday topic. And I really, the every single day he is playing while these allegations are active is going to be an awful day. That's why Major League Baseball knew we have to sit Trevor Bauer down. We have to sit him down. And baseball did it right. And what happened? It's moving forward, and everything is happening as it should. And with Deshaun Watson, our kind of hands are tied. No, you can make the rules. You're the NFL. You can figure this out. They're not ready. They're not ready.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
A big week in the NFL. We need a lot of answers to questions. So joining us now on the hotline, CBS Sports NFL insider extraordinaire Jason Lockenfora. You can follow him on Twitter at Jason Lockenfora. And I'm here to break the big Jason Lockenfora news.
Oh,
he
boy.
Is now officially on probation as he was the person trying to sneak into the Ravens radio booth yesterday in the middle of the game.
I was in studio in New York, but yes, I also had a doppelganger who couldn't get enough Jerry Sandusky, and really none of us can, and that's a great booth, and I love all those guys, but no, it was not.
I thought it was you. I thought it was you. Kind of looked like you had a Syracuse hat on. I thought it was you. It kind of looked like you. All right, I'll believe you. Tell me the truth.
I was several zip codes away.
All right.
I think it was a nice effort by the guy to try to change the energy of that game, though.
Yeah, I mean, whatever it takes, right? But it was certainly a hell of an afternoon for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Who, I'll tell you what, man. You know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago that Joe Burrow is the absolute real thing, and
yes.
good times are coming for the Bengals, and they're here. I mean,
they're here now.
I mean, look, they have not. They obviously last year dealt with the ultimate adversity, right? You don't get through 11 weeks with your quarterback. He goes down and he's getting major knee surgery, and his season's over. That's big time adversity. This year, they've been incredibly lucky from a health standpoint. They're not the deepest team in the league, but they're scrappy as hell. They're playing their ass off for Zach Taylor. The defense has come leaps and bounds from a year ago. They're out to kind of like scout people, right? Like they're out for blood. Like they're out to show that we're not these, you know, the same sort of jamoke operation that's been going on here since the Marvin Lewis thing started falling apart. And they've got playmakers, and they play within a team construct, and they clearly have a lot of self-confidence. And am I shocked that they beat the Ravens? Not at all. Am I shocked that they beat them 41-17 in Baltimore? Yeah, I am. That they scored 28 points in the fourth quarter, and I'm sorry, 28 points in the second half, and absolutely destroyed them in the fourth quarter to a point where it looked like the Ravens' defense was maybe sort of quitting a little bit. That doesn't happen very often. But again, a lot of football to be played. We'll see how things go. I think the margins are slim for them because they're not as deep as some other teams. And like, if they had to go through the wave of injuries that the Ravens or the Steelers or the Browns have experienced, am I absolutely certain they'll come out on the other side of it, you know, still one of the best teams in the AFC? I'm not. But you know what? Maybe they won't have to go through that. And the reality is, right now, they are one of the best teams in the AFC. And I don't think they're going to fall apart unless there's things out of their control that tear that roster apart from an injury standpoint.
Jason, after a blowout loss to the New York Football Giants, the Carolina Panthers have evidently become a bigger player in the potential Deshaun Watson sweepstakes. What's the update this week?
Look, I've been reporting for, you know, a long time, a very long time, that David Tepper was very enamored of Deshaun Watson since before Deshaun, any of these allegations came to light against Deshaun Watson, that Tepper is trying to build a regional foothold franchise there that extends from, you know, North Carolina, South Carolina, becomes a team that draws from a wide swath of population centers. He's trying to get a new stadium built. And obviously Deshaun Watson, you know, right down the road in South Carolina at Clemson, did amazing things. And he knows a franchise quarterback when he sees one, because he was a minority owner in the Steelers for the totality of for much of Ben Roethlisberger's run. And that he was never really sold on Sam Darnold as being the guy, and he's not so sold on Joe Brady being this quarterback, whisperer, genius, coordinator, play caller, and that ultimately positional talent trumps all, right, especially at that position. And he's on that team for several years now, and it's been one stopgap after another. Now, ultimately, does that mean that he's going to go to the lengths in real time with Deshaun Watson facing 22 lawsuits for sexual misconduct and sexual assault, and that he's going to beat all comers and offer more than Stephen Ross and just absolutely make this happen? I'm not certain of that. But I also don't rule it out. I think Miami is still the most likely team to make this happen, and they have been the most motivated team and, frankly, the most desperate team to try to get Deshaun Watson. And could there be a dark horse like a New Orleans or somebody else? There certainly could, a team that's played it very close to the vest. But the Texans really want to make this happen by next Tuesday. And at this point, I'm more convinced than ever that it's likely to happen.
Jason Lockenfor, our guest here, the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon. All right, so with that, you know, is going to be a big topic all week long. And as we get closer to Thursday, the Packers in a little bit of a COVID situation. Mm-hmm. Devontae Adams is on the COVID list. Yeah. We have other people, other personnel. Is this something where, okay, hey, we can manage this, it's only Monday? Or is this, oh, man, this puts the game in jeopardy on Thursday?
Well, I mean, certainly the league has made it clear through the offseason that in terms of a game being in jeopardy, we were going to have to be in some pretty dire straits. And we've seen teams, you know, have to rely on backup wide receiver, you know, assistant wide receiver coaches to relay plays in or whatever. Like, they're not, you know what I mean? That's not going to keep the train from leaving the station. Right now, in terms of the number of players in the COVID protocols, it's not nearly to the point of what it would take from derailing this game from being played. And even moving games, you know, is just not something that we're really going to see happen unless we reach such an acute situation in terms of manpower available that for competitive reasons, you know, that's the next step. So, look, we don't know how quickly this will spread or what's going on there. We know that the defensive coordinator, Joe Barry, tested positive. We know Devontae Adams tested positive. But things would have to, in the next 48 hours, rise far beyond that to reach a point where we're talking about anything involving the kickoff of this game. And and what that looks like. And we're clearly not out of the woods. And I think if you look at now, we're almost a season and a half through this thing. And we have not had a single game compromised. I think that's startling, right? That's staggering. I didn't think it was possible, but it has been to this point. And as of now, that Thursday kickoff is very much still on schedule. But again, things can change rapidly.
All right, Jason, take out the – it's like going back to school. You take out the best team you lost to, Arizona, the worst team you lost to, the Jets. What are the Tennessee Titans right now?
You know, I think Tennessee Titans are pretty good. The defense is not great. But who's got a transcendent defense in the AFC? The Buffalo Bills, to me, are clearly the most balanced team. But after that, I don't know. I mean, Pittsburgh's defense is good. I don't think it's great. Devin Bush has not been good. Minkah Fitzpatrick has not been nearly as good as he was a couple years ago. They're you know, a little Stephon Tuitt hasn't played yet. You know, Cam Hayward is much closer to the end than the beginning. It's kind of a one-man army with Watt at times. The Bengals' defense is very, very solid and I think ascending. And again, I think Cincinnati is pretty good. I'm not ready to say they're up there with Buffalo yet. Baltimore's defense is horrible. They can't stop the pass. They've given up almost 1,200 yards of yak already. They've given up over 2,000 passing yards. They don't get a pass rush unless they sell out to do it. You know, the Chargers' defense has got awful, especially against the run. The Chiefs don't even pretend to play defense. You know, the Raiders' defense is they counterpunch with you. They hang, but, like, I don't know. Like, is that really going to be a January defense that you have to fear? I mean, you just start going through the teams in the conference. I think the Colts are an ascending defense. They're getting their sea legs under them. They're better than their record, but, like, are they feared? Well, they don't have anybody off the edge that you really have to worry about that much. I mean, maybe if they get Quiddy Pay back. But you kind of go through this exercise, and it's like, okay, well, the Titans – do have a really good quarterback, and they can gouge you in play action. And AJ is for real, and the running back is obviously in a like on a different planet than everybody else. So, are they going to win their 11 games? You know, 10, 11, 12 games. Now that we're playing 17, yeah. Are they going to be a factor in January? Yeah. Could they be the team they were 2 years ago, where they had Kansas City on the ropes in the second half? Or will they be the team last year that had a lead on Baltimore, you know, and at home and then gave it up? I don't know. I do still have reservations about their secondary in particular. But I really think it's going to be pretty wide open in the AFC. I mean, I think when this tournament starts, you're going to be able to make the case for, I don't know, you know, five or six different teams that if things break the right way and they get the right matchups, they could be the last one standing in that conference.
All right, Jay, lastly, you got to help me out here, okay? And I go through the 54-point debacle yesterday. Clearly, I don't know if Robert Saleh is a good coach or not. We're not prepared for games. Why are we trading a draft pick for Joe Flacco? What the hell are we doing trading a draft pick for Joe Flacco?
Yeah, I don't know, man. But look, you should have just gone ahead and signed. Like, you should have just kept Joe Flacco.
Right,
like,
exactly.
I mean, that's the ridiculous part is, oh, we're going to go with Zach Wilson and Mike White and nothing else. I mean, it's bad. I mean, that was one of my best bets last week, and I'm like, the only reason that this spread isn't 14 is because there's already three games that are, like, more than 14, you know? And for the NFL slate in a limited week where you got a bunch of teams on a bye, they're not going to have three teams getting two touchdowns. But they destroyed them 25-6 the last time around. You know what I mean? And Wilson threw the four picks, and if New England had a semblance of an offense at that point, it would have been 48-6 and not 25, but they didn't, and it was only Mac Jones' second game, and they were really kind of super uber conservative. But no, I'm not surprised that that was an absolute trouncing. And come on, you think Belichick was going to call off the dogs? They lost four in a row at home. He's watching Tom Brady doing another victory lap. Like, they were going to slit their throat five times over and, you know, whatever, eat their hearts. Like, that was going to be an absolute bloodbath. And it was. And the crazy thing is, White played better than Wilson. So I don't know what's going on there. They're so far from being a contending team. I mean, you look at teams like Detroit, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Lions. Oh, I said Detroit. The Texans. It's pretty brutal. Like, it's as much as we talk about parity, right, and any given Sunday, and margins are so slim. There's also a lot of haves and have-nots going on, and there were a lot of blowout games last week. And I think we're going to, frankly, continue to see a lot of blowout games because there's a lot of teams that are god-awful right now.
You can follow him on Twitter at Jason Lockenfora. That is at Jason Lockenfora. His latest at CBSSports.com as well. Jay, as always, buddy, appreciate your time, man. We'll talk to you next week, my friend. Thanks
always
so much.
My pleasure, gentlemen.
See you, Jason.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
Today is the 35th anniversary, as we are on the eve of Game 1 of the World Series tomorrow night, of what at this point you have to say is the most famous play in baseball history. You know, there's lots of big moments baseball that you've seen 100 times, but as time has gone on and where we sit right now here in 2021, it was 35 years ago today that this happened.
3-2 to Mookie Wilson. Little roller up along first, behind the bag. It gets through Buckner. Here comes Knight, and the Mets win it. If one picture is worth 1,000 words, you have seen about 1,000,000 words. But more than that, you have seen an absolutely bizarre finish to Game 6 of the 1986 World Series.
And just like he's done throughout his career, Vin Scully absolutely nails it. I mean, this is 35 years ago, and behind the bag is still, yeah, Mets fans just got each other and go, behind the bag, behind the bag, behind the bag, behind the bag. At this point, we've had a lot of famous plays in baseball history, right? Kirk Gibson's home run, Bobby Thompson's home run. There's so many. This play is just different. It's the most recognizable play. It's when you see it, you know exactly what you're going to see. The mileage off of this play, the fact that it's still part of conversations. They're still doing a 30 for 30 on the 86 Mets, right? Not doing a 30 for 30 on the 88 Dodgers and Gibson's home run. Gibson's home run is a big deal. This play is just different, and you can see the staying power that it has because of the backstory to it, right? Let's compare it because you had that in the Gibson home run, which, my God, you know, 2 years apart, which is really big. But you had this play that gives you so many avenues, and Bill Buckner's life, what it was like after, and how, you know, look, he died very young. He was a guy that took a lot of things and pills to even play in Major League Baseball, painkillers. And I remember reading the book about the 86 Mets where he said, you know, I don't know what the rest of my life is going to be like, but I got to keep playing. And, you know, that was a stunning thing to read about Buckner and you know, his love for the game and everything that went along with it and what goes on in the 86 Mets being such a big team, you know, historically. But this play, really, there is nothing else like it because it's all the best and the most heartbreaking parts of Major League Baseball when you're at it. The Mets were the bad guys. The Red Sox hadn't won a World Series in over 75 years. This was it. This was breaking the curse of the Bambino. They had to wait a few more years for it. But this had everything. And I, you know, more look back at it, it's not just a big anniversary. It's the most famous play in baseball history.
Yeah, you go through the lexicon of, I mean, you got three plays that would be on the medal stand of the last 30 years, right? And two of them really shouldn't be remembered as the worst because there were game sevens. Of course, I refer to Steve Bartman as the third play in this holy triumvirate, as it were. And, you know, blame Calvin Schiraldi you know, as much as anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it became this iconic play. A guy who was a pretty steady first baseman in the field, obviously older and not moving as well, but a professional hitter. I mean, all the things this guy did in his career all summarized in this play. And you, that's like we talk about all the time, right? All the good that you do, wherever it is, can get erased just like that. The Thanos snap of the finger, right? You can dominate whatever game you're playing, whatever game your kid's playing, and one 15-second play that they miss erases all that good work. Likewise for Bill Buckner, a fantastic career all those years, Dodgers, Cubs, into the Red Sox, and there it is, forever linked. I mean, he at least made some money off it. I mean, it doesn't help the psychological pain and certainly the derision and everything else that went with it. No question about that. But it is one of those iconic plays. And again, there was a game seven.
and here's the other part of this play that gains a lot of attention. Right? Mookie Wilson wrote a book a few years ago, and there's always been the question of if Buckner makes the play, Mookie says, I probably would have beat him to the bag. Right. So I probably would have been. So, you know, here's Mookie saying, hey, I probably would have been even more of a hero because I would have got to the bag. And it's probably up in the air if he could have got there. Like Buckner's the kind of player that would dive head first to first base to try to make that play if he gets the grounder. Right. But could Mookie be in the bag? And I think everybody is missing the point of that play. If Mookie Wilson gets to first base, the Mets have first and third with two out. Like, Ray Knight is not scoring around third base.
There's still another pitch. There's still another play. Yes.
There's another batter coming. I mean, this wasn't – if Ray Knight had
– Look, if Ray Knight is getting sent around third, we got a whole other conversation happening here.
I mean, if it was a speedster at second base, right, that was rounding third and saw the play at first and Buckner has to dive and he's off, then maybe, okay, hey, I'm aggressive and I try to get home. But if Mookie Wilson beats Buckner to the bag, it's first and third. And Mookie Wilson is not famous.
It's just another play. Oh, he beat him to the bag. Okay.
No one's writing book. Mookie Wilson, no one cares about his book outside of New York. And Bill Buckner.
Well, he doesn't get to write a book.
Oh, no, he could write one. I mean, all Mets fans would buy it because it's Mookie. It's part of the 86 Mets. I mean,
But the point is, if that play didn't happen, you don't know what the end result is, which is what I thought you were leading it to. Instead, you still assume the victory.
But, I mean, we don't know, right? But look, 86 Mets are still the 86 Mets, right? Buckner doesn't.
But they wouldn't have been the 86 Mets if they don't win the damn series.
But they still, well, it was either them or the Red Sox that were winning.
God, man.
It was either them or the
right.
Red Sox that
so
were
what?
Winning.
So what? He's going to write a book. Needing consolation because they were the losing team in the World
Series?
Why can't
Mookie Wilson write a book? Why couldn't he write a book? Why couldn't he write? Anybody's allowed to write a book.
I'm not saying.
Written about 11 books.
Look, he just celebrated however many weeks without an arrest.
Hey, 41 weeks without an arrest for Lenny Dykstra. Hey, congratulations.
I like that he's, you know, you got to commemorate your milestones. Find your wins where you can.
But that's the thing, is that it wouldn't have been a famous play. And who knows how it goes from there. Look,
right?
The Mets had already tied the game. So at worst, it's, you know, for the Red Sox, it's all right, well, maybe we go to extra innings again. Who knows? But the damage had been done. But it's not like Mookie gets to first base and suddenly, oh, it's an infield hit. And Ray Knight scores, and Mookie's an even bigger hero. Hey, I got the infield hit instead of I hit the ball that went under Buckner's leg.
0-90. You My know, story, Mookie people, Wilson.
90 feet from glory, Mookie Wilson. I mean, that's really the, you know, if you really want to outline it and say, hey, even if he does beat Buckner to the bag, that's the situation. There's first and third, two outs. And Buckner, and here's the thing, Buckner does not become the scourge.
Sure.
Of the. Now, what would happen then would be, let's say Buckner doesn't beat Wilson to the bag. Let's say the Mets get a hit, they win the game. Then it would be, how does John McNamara really not pull him for Dave Stapleton, who was a better first baseman, and they wanted to leave Buckner out there because they were going to win the World Series, want him to celebrate on the field. Then it would have been even more of, why is your best defensive first baseman not in the game? But it wouldn't have been on Buckner. It would have been, oh, the guy, you know, they hit it to him.
Right.
What could he do? We got the ball. He couldn't get to the bag in time because he wasn't fast. So that would have been the storyline, and it would have just been one of many storylines in the World Series. If only this had happened. If only this had happened. But the play is because it went through Buckner's legs. If Buckner makes the play, it's just another play in the World Series that people have forgotten over many years. And who knows what happens after that? But that's what people forget. forget. It's like, oh, yeah, Mookie going to beat it out. And what? And then Ray Knight just still tries to get. Ray Knight is rounding third base with his hands on his helmet, leaping in the air because the ball gets by right. Bill Buckner. He's got plenty of time to get home. He's not rounding third base going, I'm getting home, man. You watch. I'm a hero. No, he's holding his helmet, leaping in the air like he's in a meadow and there's flowers everywhere. Yeah, so that, you know, every time you hear something like that, understand that that's the outcome if Mookie Wilson does beat him to the bag.
Yeah, the other side, you know, because obviously we're getting texts from Frostburg, Bershinger's looking at me with daggers. You know, Kirk Gibson's home run was great, and obviously Vin Scully's call of Kirk Gibson's home run is great. It was game one, people. Right? I mean, you could say, hey, it shattered psyches and all this other stuff. It's game one. So let's just calm down.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
It is over in Seattle. The Jets' first round draft pick moves up a little bit more. The Seahawks fall to 2-4. They are 0-3 at home now this season as they lose New Orleans 13-10. The final possession for the Seahawks. Geno Smith gets sacked on third down, and shockingly, they do not convert a 4th-and-28, which really I thought it was there. I mean, it's Geno Smith. And so the Saints win a really ugly game, dropping the Seahawks to 2-5. And look, let's be honest here for a second. First of all, forget that the Jets drafted both Sam Darnold and Geno Smith to be their quarterbacks. Right? Forget about that for a second, just because that's, you know, that's like the ancillary fun part of this. The Seahawks season is over. All right, here they are at 2-5, and the next 3 weeks they can get out of, without Russell Wilson, 3-7 at best. Because they had the Jaguars coming up, and it's the Jaguars, you never know. But the next two games after that are going to be impossible for the Seahawks. Because, again, even if Russell Wilson does come back and they play Green Bay in a game in 3 weeks, is that really going to be enough, right? They got the I'm sorry, when we play the Cardinals in 3 weeks, is that really going to be enough? The Cardinals are the best team in football right now. It's Jaguars next week, then it's at the Packers, then it's home for the Cardinals. They may lose to the Jags, all right? So it's not suddenly, hey, we got the Jags, we're good, we're getting
Jaguars
up.
Coming no. off a bye week.
Yes, you, well, I mean.
And a
you
big know, win.
Listen, Urban Meyer has a lot of chance to go to bars, in, you know, off a bye week, so you never know if he's going to
Oh, come
there.
On, that's cheap. But, that's a cheap, tawdry joke right there, Smith. How dare you? We're a highbrow operation around here. How dare you try to take our class status down?
But you are talking about the Jaguars, the Packers, and the Cardinals. At best, you're getting out of that with one win. And so now you're sitting at 3-7, and you will probably be, what, 6 games behind Arizona at that point? Probably 5 or 6 games behind the Rams. The division is too tough, and you have games with the Rams and the Cardinals coming up again later on in the season. It's just not your year. It's just not happening. And this era of the Seahawks, where we've seen excellence from them all throughout since 2012, since Russell Wilson became the quarterback, guess what? Russell Wilson gets hurt, and suddenly here go the Seahawks down the tubes without him. But that's it. I mean, tonight you can say this was the night the Seahawks season ended, because if they had gotten a win tonight to go to 3-4, okay, we get one more win. We beat the Jaguars. We're 4-4. Then you lose. All right, you're 4-6. You're still somewhat in it. But you're looking at 3-7 as the best case scenario. It's done. The Seahawks season is done right now.
Well, the biggest thing is you're looking up at two teams in the division, right? The Rams got tested, but they escaped. Still thought Ramsey got there early, but that's just me. But, you know, Jared Goff throws the interception. They tack on a field goal. Rams survive, succeed, and proceed. And Arizona's just been fantastic. Just both sides of the ball. You see what they're doing, what Vance Joseph has done with that defense, and J.J. Watt still has some left in him. Buda Baker's been fantastic. Actually, 1 year ago tonight, right, he made his presence known, because we had those, DK Metcalf flying down the field to catch him, if you remember that play. Maybe you do. Maybe you don't. Maybe you're still thinking about 1986. I'm not sure. But when we look at this Seahawks squad, I mean, you're looking up at two teams that show no signs of slowing down. The Rams, yes, they were tested, but week to week, you know, little things in that offense get a bit better. For Arizona, they can go drop a game or two. I mean, Thursday, at least as it sets up, you've got a gift that Devontae Adams may not be available to play. right, on the COVID list, and you start going down the list of receivers, it basically becomes Aaron and Aaron, right? It's just Jones and Aaron Rodgers. Because the next leading receiver after Aaron Jones, you want to take a guess?
Bob Hope?
Nicely done.
You like that?
No, huh? No. Last check, he's still not with us anymore. but Tonyan and Alan Lazard, both at 15 receptions. So no Devontae Adams changes that one. So let's chalk up a win for the Arizona Cardinals there. Let's start prognosticating to week eight, shall we? But you're looking up, and the 49ers, we'll get to them in a minute. They've got, between injuries, ineffective, they've got everything. They got a nice swirling mess, as it were, and including that big loss last night to the Colts on Sunday Night Football that everybody got to watch in live and in living color, all the problems that they've got there. So you're chasing. You're 0-3 for the first time at home since, I think I saw that right, was it 1992?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so you had that, and you had the Patriots that really wanted to beat up on your Jets because they'd been winless at home. It's just a topsy-turvy world here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, listen, not in a Jim Broadbent, cool, kind of goofy movie kind of way. There's a reference for you, people. Jim Broadbent, Slughorn, getting after it.
Now, look, this is the other part of this now, which is the next part of this conversation. Because, look, the Seahawks season is over, but the drama is just beginning. So, listen, if you're losing on the field, as long as you provide drama, that's a great thing. Because what are we now seeing in the offseason? How upset was Russell Wilson with the team? You're not listening to me. I want my impact heard more. I want changes. I want X, Y, and Z, or I'm gone. And what did the Seahawks do? They just waited him out, and they brought in an offensive coordinator that you didn't know if it was going to work. Hey, but it worked okay, right? And Russell Wilson had a phenomenal start to the season before he got hurt. But now here you are without him, and you are losing. This now makes Russell Wilson the most powerful person in the Seahawks organization. He has a bargaining position that is now unmatched. And whatever he wants, you have to do. Because if he wants out and he sits, says, I want to go, and I'm sitting out and you're going to trade me someplace, you're screwed. You are absolutely screwed. So this went from Schneider and Pete Carroll, listen, we're going to make the moves here. We're doing this. And, okay, Russ, you can say what you want, but we're not going to listen to you. Now suddenly it's, oh, crap, we're in a lot of trouble. And the more time goes on, watch the more Pete Carroll's name is going to be linked to other coaching jobs, because if it gets to the end of the season, Russell Wilson's going to go, ha-ha, yeah, I want changes now. I want somebody else. I want somebody to come in who's going to do things my way and is going to give me the ball and is going to listen to me. Right? I want to do it here. This is my I want to have this voice here. I'll go someplace else if I want to. Pete Carroll clearly was not going to do that with Russell Wilson. So now Pete Carroll is losing all the mojo, all the decision-making, and it's all going to Russell Wilson. Because the more they lose, the more they realize how they can't get along without him, and that balance of power is going to flip to him. What? Trust me. Pete Carroll, listen to all the different rumors that you're going to hear. He'll be linked to going back to USC.
Well, he already tried to link himself to that.
Just watch. Pete Carroll, someplace other than Seattle, is going to start to be a very popular thing, because he knows, oh, man, I can't just suddenly become friends with Russell Wilson again. And it's going to work, and it's going to be great. Everybody remembers last offseason. Now Russell Wilson's walking around going, see, you need me way more than you thought. Just watch. Trust me.
Allegedly even had a short list. He never said anything publicly either. Although it was fun to see him kind of get mocked for doing nothing but looking at his phone for 2 hours watching the Kraken the other day. Like, literally, it's that video. He never looked up. Like, all right, then. And look, to his defense, tepidly as I do it, they may have been at intermission when someone decided to take that footage. But either way, the point being that, yes, he does have the power, and at least to make it uncomfortable. As a team, you can still say beat it and see how far that goes. But we've seen Pete Carroll leave a sinking ship before, and if he realizes that the world has gone asunder, and watching this game tonight, right, the fact that you're not at least trying to throw the ball up to DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett to get them involved down the field is just a clown show, because Alex Collins couldn't run. Right, they had nothing going and looked, and maybe it was still raining, but at least on my crystal clear monitor here in the Fox Sports Radio studios. It looked like it cleaned up weather-wise, that you should have been able to, you know, drive into a ball when you weren't getting driven into the turf like Geno Smith was on a number of plays in the second half. But, it just curious game plans. But, yeah, Pete Carroll has bailed before. He did it before all the sanctions hit at USC. And right now, if he thinks the road is really going to get bumpier than it is right now, then yeah, I would look for him to bail. The other thing is maybe he does the mea culpa, hits the prayer pose, and starts saying, "Russell, please don't leave me." Singing the Pink song. Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da. Please don't leave me because I was wrong. We can't do anything without you.
But is he going to be okay not being the voice in the organ? It's been his show. Since he showed up, it's been Pete Carroll's show. And he elevated Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Russell, as what happens with every coach and quarterback have been together for a long time. There eventually becomes friction and you don't know what their relationship is like. It's not just Brady and Belichick, but it's Aaron Rodgers, McCarthy, all these different things. And now McCarthy, LaFleur, it just happens. It's just a natural thing. And is Pete Carroll really going to stay if he's not Pete Carroll anymore? Because if it's Russell Wilson saying, "I want to do X, Y, and Z," Pete Carroll's going to go, "You know, I got a pretty good reputation. I got a few years. I'm older, but I got a young body and I'm still moving around great, and I've got a lot of energy." He can ride his ticket anywhere else in the NFL he wants to go to. And so if it's a case of I can come back, but I'm you know, Russell's making all the moves and he's really the GM of the team, yeah, I'll go someplace else. Yeah, that's the big thing with Pete Carroll.
Yeah, but does he get to take Earl and Richard and Cam and Bennett and all those guys with him? That sure as hell helped back in the day now, didn't it? All of a sudden, there's no boom in the Legion of Boom, and this is what we get.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.